Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC. I'm Jose Candelario, and today we have 3 great conversations lined up for you. Our headliner is Jack Hay Harry, but before we get to Miss 227, we will have a conversation with Young MC and see what he's been up to, and we begin our first conversation this evening with Fab of Mini Vanilli and Damon Elliott, a.k.a. Nomad, in their remake of Blame It on the Rain, featured on Netflix's Monsters, The Lyle and Eric Menendez Story. Why the remake, and what's it, you know, what's the inspiration?
Inspiration is, well, it started with Diane Warren, who wrote the song. I work with her daily, and we're doing a tribute to Diane, you know, covering her songs in the reggae, island reggae field. So I chose for my participation on this album, the Blame It on the Rain. And I called Fab and I said, hey, man, is it cool if I cover, you know, such a mega song? And he was like, dude, go get him. Let's go. And he came on board, helped with the production and just being a great sounding board for it. And that's kind of how it happened. This was 7 months ago before all of this incredible craziness happened, you know, and that's how it started.
Fab, for you, what does this song mean over time and how has it aged in your soul?
Well, you know, for me, it brings me back to the beginning of my career. Kind of an incredible journey, but I was able to live through it. And because I lived through it and stood back up and reinvent myself, now I celebrate life. You know, for me, it's a celebration of life because every time I get on stage, every weekend, whether it's the band or back of tape, I do my thing and it's like stepping into this time machine. But the people are still reacting the same as what they used to react like back then. Those songs, I call them immortal songs. They're going to be here forever. And now because of Monsters and the resurgence, the young generation is now discovering it. And it's really amazing to see how they're reacting to it. Because, you know, oldie the goodie. A good song is a good song. And you can see it. It was made, the intent behind the song was made with love. Things were made differently way back. And I can see that. You know, whether it's Girl Knows True, whether it's Blame on the Rain, whether it's Girl I'm Gonna Miss You, to mention the ones that are in a Monster series. It's amazing to see how they weathered the time. And now I'm just celebrating Rob as well, who's no longer here. And Damon, 7 months before Monsters, came to me and said, hey, you know, I'm thinking about doing that. I was like, man, you got my blessings. And now everything is just serendipitous. Everything happens at the same time. And it's lovely to see that. So we both going to join forces and have joined forces and continue to join forces and see where it takes us. You know, music is life.
Yes.
Dame, this is a Grammy Award-winning song. Do you carry that weight with you, or are you just letting it flow?
I'm having fun, man. I grew up in this business, and like Fab said, a hit is a hit is a hit, right? And the one thing I want to say is that the version I did not want to in any way change the integrity. That's one thing that's very important about music. When you have a hit and a monster, no pun intended, of this size, you don't change the integrity of the song, right? You do with what we call a true cover. And that's what I did, because just as much as I'm paying homage to Diane, I am a huge Milli Vanilli fan. And
thank you,
bro. Yeah, absolutely. You know that, brother. And so, you know, when you hear me singing those words, you know, and doing it, I literally try to keep the integrity of the song musically and just give it a little bit of a reggae flair, man. A little skank here and a little change in the bass line maybe, but that's about it.
And it landed nicely too. You know, it's perfect.
Yes.
I love the version.
This song it just fascinates the masses, everything that went behind the scenes. You yourself are a true artist, and afterwards you took singing lessons. I mean, you took the craft serious.
You know, the singing lessons, they lasted just a few, you know, I didn't have the money to pay for that. So what do? You sing. That's what you do. You perform, you sing, you get better. That's what an artist is supposed to do. And that's what I've been doing, you know, for over 30 years, you know. So, at some point, you know, you got to get better. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to survive. And, you know, music is where I live from. So there was no other choice. But that was my dream. My original dream was to become a singer-songwriter. But those songs gave me the career. So when I perform, when the promoter said, hey, Pat, we'd like you to perform way back then. They're like, yeah, but we want you to perform those songs. I was like, okay, no biggie. So we started it. And back then, I used to sing those songs anyways, even though that was not me there. Well, I was doing it. You know, who was doing it and rehearsing it with the band. And, you know, those songs are part of me, and they're part of, you know, we're interconnected for life. And when people say, oh, my God, you know, those songs are so connected to my soul. And I say, well, we are connected as well, because music is the soundtrack of our lives, and we are in people's psyche. So those songs will remain. And as you can see, the youth is receiving it with love. You know, they're loving those songs, they sing those songs. And now I'm becoming part of their subconscious as well. And Damien, same thing. By redoing this version in a reggae version, then some young people are going to discover it and be like, oh, yeah, remember, like, way back when that version, the reggae version came out. And that becomes now part of their subconscious and the soundtrack of their lives. So music is healing, music is powerful, and will always be an element that we all consume, but we can't touch it. And it produces love at the same time. And when it's made with love, it produces love. That's my philosophy, you know?
I mean, you could have done a country version, but you went reggae. Yeah. Why reggae and not country? Because country is hot right now.
Well, because my success as an artist has been in the island reggae market for the last 6-7 years. I've had a lot of major hits in that market, and also because the album that we're doing with Diane is island reggae covers of her hits, and I chose Blame It on the Rain. That's exactly why we did it in that genre.
And why Blame It on the Rain? I mean, Milli Vanilli has other hits, because
Diane Warren wrote Blame It on the Rain. I was planning as well. I told Fab before, obviously being a huge fan, my tribute to Milli Vanilli is flipping all of their hits that I love into the island reggae market, which I'm planning to do down the line, because I grew up on these songs, love all of these songs. Know the words backwards, forward, sideways, even though the dance moves, because let's be honest, Rob and Fab were like aerobics instructors back then, man. And he still is. Fab is like an aerobics. If you try to dance all the way through one of their mid-tempo or up-tempos, try to dance to Girl, You Know It's True. And when you get to the second verse, you'll be winded. And to see them do it, and to see Fab still doing it, I'm in awe. So yeah, I'm going to attempt. And I told him, I joked with him. I said, man, I'm going to do a cover.
Thank you, brother.
Album paying homage to you, you know, with the songs. And gosh, you know, because here's the one thing I will say. The reggae market lends itself perfectly to covers of songs. And that, to kind of put the nail on the, you know, hit the nail on the head for your question about country and all of that. Reggae is one of the best genres. I will say island reggae specific, for covering hits, because it literally, you don't lose the integrity of the original songs.
How does it feel to just still be able to go anywhere on the planet, literally anywhere on the planet, and sing this song and get that reaction?
It's amazing, you know. And for me, I'm so glad that I remain true to myself and to my dream to become a singer-songwriter. I knew the road was and would be uncertain as far as where I would land, but I put the work in. I learned to play an instrument. I learned how to produce. And then it gave me the confidence to continue and say, you know what? This is what I was born to do. So I turned to music and I said, I'm going to prove you that I am worth your relationship. And she said, okay, then show me. And that's been my attitude for years, to just like make music that also feels like it breathes who I am, an extension of people who haven't discovered that part of myself yet, but they're about to. And, And 2025 is going to be the year of, you know, my music coming out. And I'm the father of four as well. So I know what love is, and I had to love myself first before moving forward. And I forgive everyone that did what they did to us by scapegoating us and not really taking the blame as well, no pun intended, you know. But I'm still here, and I'm here with a smile. So go check out the documentary. There's a movie as well. Damon is there with Blame It on the Ram. We're celebrating Milli Vanilli. My dude is not here anymore. God rest his soul. And I'm celebrating Rob at the same time, you know. And, you know, long live Milli Vanilli. Long live.
You're listening to The Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, and that was Damon Elliott, a.k.a. Nomad and Fab from Milli Vanilli. Our next guest is known for his song Bust a Move and collaborating with Tone Loc on Wild Thing and Funky Co Medina. He is Young MC with his new song Fun Part. Let's get right into the lyrics. In there you said, no sample clearance needed.
Oh, yeah, so ain't no sample, so ain't no need to clear it. Yeah, that's how the lyric goes, yes. I'm proud of that. Actually, as a producer, I like the fact that I can come up with something that grooves people, that moves people, that I don't have to pull a sample from, that I can craft a song like anyone else can, but I can make something unique enough where it has the feel of a sample, but it's not a sample.
How important is that to you to put out positive vibes like we did back in the early 90s and late 80s?
To me, it's vital. I mean, I've had time to sit back and see how I approach listening to music, right? So I've always thought that if people are taking the time to give you 3 minutes to listen to something, they're not doing it so you can preach at them. They're not doing it to get have your opinions bashed over their heads. They're doing it as an escape. They're doing it to have fun, to have joy, to dance, to get them away from their problems. So I start my creative process from that. Like, what am I giving to people? Even on stage, I'm thinking that, like, someone's out to have a good time. They got the babysitter. They took the trip. They're getting in their seats, and they're going to give me, 20 minutes on stage in front of them, and they know they're going to get Bust a Move. What else can I give them? All of those things play into my mind now while I'm creating music. It's not like some just random, like, oh, we'll see how it turns out. It's like, no, let's make it turn out the best so they can have a great experience and I can have a great experience giving it to them.
Let's go back to early in your career. You did sample rock riffs in your music. Now, was that your choice or was that a producer choice?
Oh, that's the label's choice. I wasn't even producing. Like Wild Thing, Funky Co Medina, even the stuff in Bust a Move was not my choice musically. I just kind of wrote to what they gave me. So this process has even been greater now because I literally can think of an entire song as opposed to, oh, what's the beat going to sound like? Let me get a beat and write to it. No, I can actually think of creating something from the ground up, and that's been really invigorating for me.
How does it feel to have a song, at least in your repertoire, that has endured the test of time, and why has it?
Oh, boy. Well, to answer the first part of the question, it feels great. It feels great to have a song that many people know, and I've going through my own mental gymnastics to see the value of it. So that's been a good thing. There's a bunch of different reasons for it. First off, it's 4 minutes and 20 seconds. It has four verses, four 16-bar verses. So that's a lot of words. So it takes a long time. You don't really get a chance to memorize that song the first time you hear it. When the record came out, we got video first, and then we got record sales, and then we got radio play. Never got all three at the same time. Record only maxed out at number 7 on the pop charts, which means that it was never at a point where it's being shoved down your throat every time you turned a corner. Turn on the radio, it's on. Go by a record store, it's on. Turn on the video, it's on. All those things didn't happen at the same time. So it took a long time for anybody who was gonna get sick of the song to get sick of the song. And then started going in movies, and people started telling their kids about it, and it started getting different licenses and different places, not even covers, but the original version. And people's reaction to that and having it being used in different kind of, movies and TV shows and video games and commercials and that kind of stuff, that's really been the thing to, the test of time. I had one guy that I was talking to say that the first time he heard the song was Dude, Where's My Car? I think over a decade after the record had come out. So, it's been cool.
Now, the theme of the song is, get up off the wall and get involved. That message still applies today.
Yeah. I would say, get off the wall, get involved, get around people, experience life. and do the things that you know you do well, you know, and try and get better at whatever it is you do.
I mean,
that's always been my approach.
I mean, this generation is very tentative at taking chances and taking risk. So the song still applies in doing that, doesn't it?
To a certain extent, it does. I mean, obviously, you don't want someone to take too big of a risk. But I think, I mean, I don't have any kids, but I will criticize some of the parenting going on. That if you keep giving your kids seventh place trophies and putting a star on their, on their hat for doing something that we normally would do by just regular course of growing up, you're not going to get someone that's going to be, you know, brave enough to expand to new horizons. So, you know, if I can do something that can get somebody out of their shell where they can, you know, go explore that thing or go, you know, capitalize on that thing they do well, I'm all for it.
This generation is a lot different than generations before. They're really accepting of hip hop and various. Is that what you contribute to the success of Fun Part?
That's part of it, absolutely. I would definitely say that's part of it, because Fun Part is a very, you know, everybody's pushing the melodic aspect, or was pushing the melodic aspect, but I think there are people that really gravitate to really good rap cadence, clear lyrics, clever lyrics, and I kind of take it upon myself that I'm not going to really start changing what I do just to try and fit into a marketplace. So one of the most validating things for me with what's going on with Fun Part is that I'm able to take the style that I've pretty much done my whole career and put it in a record that charts and put it in a record that's successful now. That makes me feel good, because that means that I can make songs that may even be able to make more of a footprint using the same style or using the same approach that I've used for so many years, and I'm able to entertain people with it.
How does it make you feel, the return of lyricism and music and hip hop and, you know, this swell and with the quote unquote underground yet again?
Well, here's the thing with the internet, the underground isn't so underground, because the same click that'll get you to the pop record will get you to the underground record. And lyrically, it's fun because, you know, it takes less effort for someone to access a song, but it also gives you the opportunity to get somebody into it to the point where they'll play it 10 times in a row and you get 10 streams from that one person.
Mm.
And then you get somebody that's memorized your record that wants to come to a show and rap it back to you. That's cool. And with Bust the Move, that took months, if not years, for an enthusiastic fan to do that. You could do that in a matter of hours, if not days, you know, now. With Fun Part or with another, you could even go back and do that with Bust the Move now, with how you people access music with streaming. So that's the kind of thing. It's like, make something that someone wants to hear again.
You are college educated. Who was the person in your life that really pushed you to follow through in school? Was it your mom, dad?
Oh yeah, I mean, my parents, you know, definitely were pushing. School was the priority. School was the meal, and then rap was the, not even the dessert. Rap was the garnish. Until it, you know, literally turned into a meal that was bigger than anything any of us could have anticipated. So my parents had pushed me in school, and I wanted to stay in school because I you know, you hear the horror stories of people going out and trying to make it in music and then not. And, you know, I felt that the music career was always going to be there. And I got signed as a junior at USC, and Bust the Move came out finals week of senior year. So I hadn't seen any of the success of Bust the Move. I had already graduated before Bust the Move had a chance to really get any traction. So I went out on the road. My parents gave me the summer, get this music stuff out of your system, come back, get a real job, you know, go to grad school, do something. And then, you know, within 9 months of that, I had a Grammy and I was platinum.
Mm. You're going back to your West Coast roots and this new music. How did you find your way back to that?
I've always had a fondness for the West Coast sound. Especially because as we started the conversation, you know, being non-sample based, the whole vibe, I had a record called Feel the Love that was like that. I had a record called Rollin', which had gotten some traction in the late 90s. And those were really West Coast sounding tracks. And to this day, I love performing them. So I'm like, okay, let me see if I can take that West Coast approach with Fun Part. And the interesting thing now with how the music business is and how the music industry is, it, you know, someone who knows West Coast hip hop would say, okay, that's a West Coast song. But then you could listen to artists that aren't West Coast artists with that same kind of vibe you know, creatively. You know, same kind of drums, same kind of bass lines, but they wouldn't necessarily call them, well, you know, West Coast artists, especially if they weren't rappers. You know, if you have a girl singing over something like that, that wouldn't necessarily be called a West Coast song, especially if that artist was not from the West Coast. So I'm keeping that in the back of my mind. Like, if I can get the same feeling that you can get from a pop artist, but I'm still coming with my rhyme style and spitting and the whole bit, that's an opportunity that I have in 2024 that I wouldn't even had in 2014. So that's something that's really invigorating for me, is that the music is not so regionalized because everybody can access everything on their computer or their phone.
Young MC Fun Part, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, man. Take care.
That was Young MC. You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, and now our next guest is known for her breakout role as Sandra Clark on 227, and then went on to play Lisa Landry on Sister Sister. She is now in the holiday Lifetime movie Make or Bake Christmas. She is none other than Jack K. Harry.
Hi.
That's your stage name. How did you come up with that?
A friend of mine gave me that name, Andre DeShields. He's in New York, a great actor living in New York. He gave me that name in 1978.
How was the early days in Harlem with Miss Flossie?
I love it. Looking back at now, you know, I grew up, I had a job when I was 14 that I loved. They started me in programs. New York was one of those places back then where everybody could get a job, you could go to school, I was going to acting classes down at the Henry Street Settlement on the Lower East Side. I had to take three or four trains to get down there, the last one being the D train, and then walking over there to Delancey Street. You know, all those great, great memories. You know, on Avenue A, I had a class with Bill Duke. Then I come run back up for my job. Then I get a movie and go over to the bakery. What's that bakery? Silver Cup Bakery over there in Astoria Studios that Bill Cosby built up when they first did the Cosby shows. I think they're called Silver Cup Studios or something in Astoria. And Long Island University, I graduated from Long Island University, the Brooklyn Center, and I used to go to juniors across the street during my, you know, I played chess. I had a great life in New York. And then I got 227.
I want to go back a little bit, because one thing that's very interesting here is you went to New York City's High School of Music with a distinction in opera.
Yes, and I still, you know, I love it, but I didn't have the discipline, because you got to rest your voice. I was looking at her, what's her name, Cynthia Erivo. She would say she goes home and puts on her tea and her honey and her, I want to go out and party. I want to go sit in the club. I want to go yell and scream. And can't do that when you have an operatic career. You've got to really, you know, hit the hay. And I was like, I don't want to do that. You know, I couldn't do it. I did it for 8 years, and I could have been great, but I'd rather do acting. And I discovered I was funny once I got 227. I didn't intend to be funny. They just said, oh, you're funny. I never knew, but I got better once I got out here in Hollywood.
I want to go back to Miss Flossie. What did she instill in you?
Sweetness, kindness, how to be alone and have a career, because having a career is not for everybody. Some people want it, but once it comes, they don't know how to accept it. And she said, some days you're just going to have to sit and think. You know, don't make a decision quick. Just sit and think, and don't be afraid to be and by alone, I mean, when you have to make a decision about moving out here to Hollywood. I could have said no, and some people do say no, but I knew I wanted it. And when I left, she said, be careful out there in the wilds of Hollywood. And she was right. But kindness and sweetness, and I got great legs from her.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, that's rich. 1983, you know, you get your television debut opposite the voice himself, Morgan Freeman. In Another World, how did you land that gig?
I went as a day player. My agent got me two lines on Another World out there in Brooklyn. That's why I said the Astoria Studios before they got renovated. And I had two lines. It was, who is it? Oh, it's you. And I did it so big. How? Who is it? They kept giving me more. They gave me 10 lines, and they gave me 25. Then they gave me a contract. I mean, it happened so quick. It happened within 2 months.
Wow.
And I couldn't believe it, yes. And then I met Morgan Freeman, Joe Morton, Petronia Paley. They were already Michelle Shea. They had the biggest African-American storyline back then. And I played a prostitute named Lily Mason. And that's how you can say my name, Lily Mason. And I didn't know. I was just trying to, you know, be good and get another job, which I did. I got a movie with Robin Williams, and I got a play. New York is like that, though. You meet people, and they take you. They just, you know, you become in a swirl. And I got lucky. But hustle, and I know people still hustle like that. Lin-Manuel Miranda was talking about how he still, he goes from thing to thing to thing, you know? And you meet such interesting people in New York. But you got to be ready for it. Mm. You really do. You can't just do it. You got to be ready.
You did a lot of acting on the stage before television. How did that lay a foundation for your career?
Well, I know how to study. I know how, like I said, be alone, do the work. Because some people, they just want the stardom or whatever on their social media. But you got to put the work in to sustain yourself. Because some days it's not happening. You know, some days you're not feeling bright and witty and warm and wonderful. But if you have technique, you can do it. You can have your PowerPoints. And now that they got AI, you can get your prompts to get you going. You know, you don't have to always be on, is what I'm trying to say. Because some days, we ain't bubbly, you know. But you can still make, you know, people see and understand and feel. Everything's not a great performance, but good is good enough sometimes. Oh, that was heavy. Yeah, good is good enough.
Now, if you had a piece of advice to young Jack Hay as she's going into this world, what piece of advice would you give her?
Enjoy it. You're not as great as you think you are in terms of people. Everybody don't like you. That's one lesson I had to learn. Why don't they like me? I'm nice. It don't matter. Sometimes some people just don't like you, or they got their own problems. You know, I've learned, have empathy. They're not into what you're talking about. So forget them and keep going. Mm. Although there's sometimes you meet an icon or somebody you really think can help you, and you walk up to them and they're a crab. So you get shade. But just know thyself and, you know, and be honest with yourself, as honest as you can be. Good is good enough. You don't have to be great. You don't have to be funny. You don't have to be witty. But you definitely got to have a confidence. So, and that's what I had. I don't know where I got it from, but I've always had confidence.
And that dish shined loud and bright in Sandra Clark. How did you land a role to 227? Slightly explain that experience for you.
Oh, no, it just came little by little. I just got the job, and they wrote the lines, and I just take them home and try to find the funny. I still do that. If you write me a part, I'll find the funny in it. Then they'll come on, and they give you more and more and more, you know. And it's just a process, and the people you work with are the ones that make you great. I work with Marla Gibbs and Della Reese. They made my timing better. My timing was good, but it got excellent working with them. Red Fox, you know. Other people you meet in life, it really makes you just better. You start sparkling.
How important is it to be open to suggestions and to learning new things consistently?
Yes, and they won't let me go. Like Tia and Tamara, the twins, they... I was just with them. They wanted me to roller skate, and I ain't that crazy, but I don't mind watching them. But they've got me into AI. They're the ones who've got me doing that. Try this, Jack. Hey, come on. Try this. So that keeps you in the know. That's what I like. It keeps you interested, you know, which is what I wanted to do. Just stay interested and not become, you know, blah. And two, you know, laissez-faire. Don't just leave things alone. Because I think I can help somebody. I don't know when, but I know it's coming.
What about Sandra Clark have everyone in America in love with that character? I mean, including me, I'll be honest.
Ah, you poor you. Well, I don't know. I ain't got. I've left her in my rear view, to be honest with you, because I can't keep up either. I'm trying. I don't do sexy as much as I used to do. Now I just do, what's the word? Sensitive. I'm doing sensitive.
You became the first African American to win an Emmy Award for Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series. Out of all your awards that you receive, which one is your favorite or, you know, profound in your life?
I guess the Emmy, yes, because being the first. But I don't really get to my head because. You know, I don't want my ego to take over because it did. Back in the 80s, I definitely had a big head. Ooh, making money and being famous and getting everything you want, it can change you. So that was important one. But what's important now is me helping young people. That's the most important thing in my life right now.
Mm. And how and now, what efforts do you have?
I don't just mean, you know, little ones. I mean, like, 20s, 30s, like that. I ain't doing all the kindergartners. No, no little kids.
I mean, from your experience, you can be there and give them insight on not getting a big head, right?
Yes. Without, you know, beating them over the head. I used to beat people over the head to try to learn. Now, I just do it by suggestion and by image. You know, I try to be a role model. I hate that word, but hey, if the shoe fits.
You went on from 227 and you were in Sister Sister, got an NAACP Image Award 2 years in a row. You have a long Hollywood career. What is the secret sauce?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. Maybe just being present, you know, being available and right timing and the right people. But I haven't been able to pinpoint it myself. I just wonder, too. That's a good question. But I think right time, right place, luck, and study. I know my stuff.
You sound like a person that harps on being prepared. Is that one message you would give any person following in your footsteps?
Yeah, it sounds boring. Show up and know your lines. For sure. You know, because a lot of people just show up and then they get flustered. I've seen them do it on the set, and they try to get too comfortable. And listen and learn, absorb. That's how you really learn. Sit in the corner sometimes and be quiet and watch and listen and learn. And then when they call on you, you're ready. You know the answers. Or you know how to fake it till you make it.
fake it till
Something
you
make it. Like that. Yeah, I still do that. But I direct also. Now my last goal is to produce, maybe. Maybe.
Maybe.
I hope so.
There's still time.
Maybe.
Make or Bake Christmas Sunday. How did this come about, and what was your experience on set?
Oh, well, I'm working with the great Vivica Fox. She plays the protagonist. She's trying to take over my bakery. I'm Denise Sugar Baker, and she says an undercover spy. But I'm all full of cookies and love and light and warmth. So she doesn't get the best of me. But it's about people falling in love and feeling great during the holidays. So, you know, so you don't have so much on your shoulders, you know, because holidays can be stressful, too, especially Thanksgiving. People sleep Thanksgiving. But you have to meet all the relatives you've been ducking all year. You know, and especially when you have success, you have to let everybody share in it because they want to. They feel good for you. And then you got a couple of people who, you know, haters, they call them. But it's making people feel good is the key to holidays.
Is that why it makes it so good during the holidays to take in something like Make or Bake Christmas?
Yes. Especially when you do it with, like I said, Vivica Fox, and you do it with Lifetime, and they give you everything you need. You know, the sets, the beautiful sets, and beautiful people. It's just, it inspires you because you go there just to work. Actors, we go to work. But when you get with people like-minded, it makes it stronger. Makes it intense. That's why I said my next project, I would love to do something with an action thriller with Ben Affleck or something. You know, Matt Damon, I would love to be M, like Judi Dench and James Bond, something like that. It just makes you want to do more. Christmas movies make you want to do more.
We're getting to the end of our delightful conversation. What message do you have to the young people aspiring out there that want to follow in your footsteps?
Study, learn, listen. Don't be afraid. Seek advice if you can get it. But don't be a nuisance. But take classes, son, and learn to get rid of the, I want to say, shyness. Some people call it, I call it being scared. But you got to get rid of that. You got to shake that off to discover your greatness. And everybody doesn't have to be warm and witty and fabulous. Like I said, good is good enough. But study. Study, study, study. Because then something will pop up. That's what it did for me. I had 5 different characters ready to go for Sandra, and they chose one. So have multiple things ready. Don't just go in there with one thought. Unless you're a chemist. Then you can do what you want.
Well, personally, I want to thank you for everything that you've done and all the characters you played and brought to life. And I've enjoyed and followed your career since I was a teenager. So thank you so much for everything.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I want to thank all my guests this evening for their time. Fab of Mini Vanilli, Damon Elliott, Young MC, and Jack K. Harry. I'm Jose Candelario for the Electric Drum only on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. And like always, thank you for listening.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.